Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham, Fleck, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I am your host, Skipjack, and this is Wheeler Dealer Radio. We are here, finally, to discuss another win by Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. A comfortable, convincing, pleasant-to-watch football game. I feel like it's been a while. I am joined by three out of our four regular panelists this week. Michael is on a numbers retreat and unable to be with us, but we have our podcast sidekick who will never leave us short, Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. We won a football game, even though it was completely undeserved.
We'll get to that in a second. Next up, we have just, you know, like studying the annals of his performances on Wheeler Dealer Radio. We have Brian. Brian, how are you doing this week?
I'm great. I'm very happy that we won a match. It seems like it's been since October.
Since you started recording 2 weeks. Podcast.
Since West Ham 2 weeks ago.
No, we played like crap in that game. It doesn't count.
Yeah, we don't deserve wins. I think we've established that this year.
Yeah.
Let's get right into it.
So how are you doing? You know, no one ever asks you how you're
doing. Thank you, Ben. Thank you. All your lessons at Sidekick School are finally paying off. I am doing very well. I'm going to start a job next week, and I'm going on a little vacation at the end of this week. And Spurs won a game. I'm feeling very good. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate that.
I don't care how you're feeling.
Shut up, Brian.
But what are you drinking?
Okay. All right. You've gone too far. Okay. So let's put annoying podcast tropes aside for once, a first for this podcast, and talk about the game this week. Spurs won 5-0 against West Ham. Just a pretty thorough thumping at White Hart Lane.
Against who?
Against Swansea, because we're all professional on this podcast. Against Swansea City. I'm just trying to spare Bob Bradley's feelings. Ben, Homer. This win, was this win deserved?
You know, I think all of the goals were bullshit, and if it weren't for Dele Alli diving and us getting a bullshit penalty, we never would have broken down the stout Swansea defense where Kyle Naughton is their best defender. It was really a gift, I think, more than anything.
This is a opinion I see online a lot that I find very irritating, and that, like, people say that, you know, like, oh, well, they got a penalty, and, like, you know, did Dele sort of earn that penalty? I think so. But, like, oh, well, that's what broke down Swansea. We didn't deserve it and all that stuff. And it's just, I don't know, I think they were under enough pressure that you can't be unhappy with this performance. I mean,
like, A, just take the fucking win. We've had a rocky stretch. Take a 5-0 win and just enjoy that. Sit in a bubble bath and enjoy your 5-0 win. That's my advice to you.
Yeah, well, you know, because I'm sure Alex Ferguson went home after some of those, like, lucky wins he got over his career and really worried about them while he was drinking wine with Mourinho.
Together.
Brian, was that penalty undeserved to start the game?
I mean, yeah.
You think?
I think so.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
I'm 100% convinced that there wasn't even any contact.
There was contact. Did Dele his leg?
Dele dragged his leg over a foot that was nowhere near him and initiated contact and flew through the air like he was goddamn Superman. That was shameful.
I don't know. We've been denied too many, like, deserved penalties this year alone for me to really be worried about that. Like,
I'm not worried about it, but, like, it's a bad habit, and it's the kind of thing that, like, when enough people get talking about how it's a dive, it's the kind of thing that's going to keep him from getting the benefit of the doubt in the future.
Well, and yes, and that was a problem we saw Gareth Bale fans have. You know, Bale got a reputation as...
Right, and then we're not getting penalties. And so, unlike Spurs fans, I think we would have broken down Swansea at some point, and you know, diving like that wasn't necessary, and I think in the long run may do more harm than good. But yeah, for the moment, whatever.
I mean, I think it's one thing to take something like the Heung-min Son penalty against West Ham.
Oh, I don't think that was a dive at all. Like,
no, but it, I mean, it's one thing to be smart and leave your leg in and, you know, draw the penalty, so to speak. It is another to sort of drag your leg and completely and totally embellish whatever minimal amount of contact there may be. You know, so I mean, like Ben said, we don't want to get a reputation of doing that. We already have some guys on the team like Lamella who have a reputation as being kind of divers, whether it's deserved or not. And we certainly don't want Dele Alli to get that right now because he's still really young.
Like, look at a guy like Harry Kane who does not have that reputation. And just this year alone, how many – and Kane's missed most of this year. But how many times have we seen Kane get manhandled in the box? And
but those are different. Those, like, kind of grabby penalties, like, those are penalties that, you know, are erratically called at best.
Someone on West Ham tried to suplex him in the first, like, 5 minutes of the match.
It was a penalty, obviously. But, you know, that's not – you don't get called for diving for, you know, going down easily when you're being wrestled. You get called for diving when you flop without contact or when you initiate contact and then pretend like you got injured. Like, one of the things that Dele Alli does so well, he might be the leader in the Premier League of being fouled. And he does a really good job of getting fouled and selling fouls. And losing that is not a helpful thing if he gets that kind of reputation.
He's also just like kind of a whiny little prick, though. Like,
yeah, but so is Diego Costa, and he keeps working for him. So I'm not sure it's a problem. He seems to be smart enough about it.
Yeah, we'll see. It doesn't matter for the game. You know, we would have won. We did win. It was a penalty that was called, and Harry Kane absolutely leathered it into the bottom corner. Great. It doesn't in any way invalidate what happened. You know, if it was like if that was our only goal, then maybe we could have, you know, a come to Jesus moment and talk about it. But we won 5-0. So anybody still freaking out about the penalty needs to grow up and move on with their life.
Yes. The rest of those goals, I mean, Swansea, I don't think they looked great before we scored that penalty, but they really started to fall apart after we scored that penalty. And I mean, part of that was because Spurs scored a pretty incredible goal about 6 minutes after Kane scored that penalty, where, I mean, there was a nice sort of interplay, and like Eriksen got in the box, was causing trouble. Kane had a or maybe Eriksen's shot, I can't remember, but there was a pretty hard shot in the box that bounced around, and it ended up coming at Heung-min Son, who took a ridiculously low percentage chance shot, like kicking it in the air, and it just bent into the net. I mean, that's probably one of the better goals we've seen this year, right, Ben?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't really count. Like, we didn't like cut up Swansea. Eriksen took a shot that deflected off a defender, and it was just luck and chance that created an opportunity, you know, for Son to take a shitty chance that happened to go in. I mean, you know, can we really get excited about that?
I mean, it's not like Jack Wilshere in Barcelona. Like, those are goals. No.
It's certainly not sustainable.
But yeah, it was a phenomenal finish from Son.
I thought this was a pretty reassuring performance for Son, who just really hasn't looked all that good since we played City, much like the rest of the team. But just hasn't looked great in a while. And I don't know if he was great in this game, but it was certainly, like, even beyond the goal, I thought he looked really good and was causing a lot of problems in a way that he hasn't in a while.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot of problems. Like, he couldn't beat a man. You know, he was taking sloppy first touches and losing the ball under limited pressure. You know, he wasn't really strong in the counter. He wasn't pressing super well. And he seemed to like kind of put it all back together for this match in a way that was very encouraging, especially as long as Eric Lamella continues to have his mystery injury and will be out for the rest of the season, probably. You know, we need Heung-min Son to be good. And so seeing him get back on the wagon, off the wagon.
Yeah.
Sure. There's a wagon involved and and he scored a couple goals. One goal. How many goals? One goal?
One goal.
One?
Just one.
Okay, but it was a good goal.
So it should count for two.
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, in a weird way, this game was – what made this game so good was a lot of Spurs players who looked a little bit off of it were having really good matches. And, I mean, Dembele looked great again. He was just owning that midfield. Not that he hasn't looked good recently, but he's been kind of spotty this year.
He's barely played this year.
Yeah, like, but he hasn't been as consistent as we expected. And honestly, it's probably due to injury, but he looked great again in this game. He was great against Chelsea, to be fair. That's
he was suspended to start the season, then he got injured. Like, people are like imputing a lot of our bad performances to a Dembele who did not even exist in the team for a significant stretch of that. It's like blaming Toby Alderweireld for not being strong at the back.
Having a strong enough back. I don't know. It's a leg injury, isn't it? Oh, well. But, you know, like, there were a lot of Spurs players who had been a little, like, if not bad, just sort of not where we want them to be. And they were all kind of firing today. Even the most, like, ardent Christian Eriksen sort of skeptic couldn't help but admire the way he played in this game. Brian, was Eriksen as good as he looked? And has he really been a problem this year? I know that has been well documented on this podcast, but was this game much better than what we're used to seeing out of Eriksen? Or is this sort of just what Eriksen does and this game happened to have a few goals in it?
I mean, I think this is very much, you know, good Christian Eriksen. You know, this year he has been below expectations. I think that's probably fair. But, you know, this is – scoring a headed goal is not something I expect from Christian Eriksen. So he looked great. I mean, he took shots that were good shots, which has been a nice change from what he'd been doing earlier season. And he was creating some real good chances. I mean, I think I saw the stat going around that he had six passes inside the 18-yard box, which is, you know, crazy to complete that many passes inside the area. And then those lead
six shots inside the box as well.
Yeah. And so and
seven shot assists, like, or key passes, I guess.
So, you know, he's not only taking good chances, but he is creating good and quality chances for us, which are then leading, you know, to actual goals. And so it's been a nice change the way he's played the last couple games.
Ben, how is Christian Eriksen's performance in this game irrelevant to Spurs?
Irrelevant?
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't count, right? Because Swansea are bad.
Yeah, Swansea are bad. So how does anything good happen and count? Like, yeah, he had the second most touches of any Spurs player on the field, but, like, he didn't have the most. So, you know, that doesn't count for anything.
And we're playing Swansea.
And we're playing Swansea. So one of the things I want to say about the we're only playing Swansea that's so annoying to me is that we've only played West Brom and we've only played Bournemouth. We've only played all of these bad teams that we struggle to get a result in. And when we finally beat the shit out of a bad team, the kind of team that we say, you know, we really should be doing better here. I don't know what else people want. Like, this is exactly the kind of performance against a bad team that we should be doing. And when we actually do it, we should be excited about, because that's what we need to do to be a good team that finishes in the top four.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, Arsenal, this is the way Arsenal make their living. You know, they win a couple of games against the top four sides, but by and large, they just beat the crap out of the really bad teams. You know, and if Spurs could just win the games that they're supposed to win and then do all right in all the other ones, we'd be sitting a lot higher on the table right now, especially because I think, you know, we've definitely had, especially in this kind of shitty run from the Manchester City game up until, you know, now, we had some easily winnable fixtures that we just didn't capitalize on.
Yeah, and you see a team like Liverpool who have, you know, lost to Burnley and then just blew it this weekend, you know, and collapsed a 3-1 lead to lose 4-3 to Bournemouth, you know, beating Swansea 5-0. Like, you take that win.
It was, I mean, you know, Spurs always joke about, oh, Dr. Tottenham's here to see you now. Like, this was the other way around. Like, yes, Swansea are bad, but we did what we had to do. We looked good against them, and we took advantage of it. Because, like you guys said, like, God knows there's been enough times we haven't done that.
I mean, at least we didn't lose to Bournemouth.
At least we didn't blow a 3-1 lead.
Well, we didn't. We didn't really create anything to even get a 3-1 lead.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, but yeah, I mean, go ahead.
It's like, even though Swansea are bad, like, nobody really put a foot wrong. Everybody had great games. You know, Eric Dyer was good at center back.
Eric Dyer was the best he'd looked at center back, which is funny because it's probably the last game you'll play at center back for a minute.
Right. You know, again, yes, it's Swansea, but we looked good all up and down the pitch. Everybody had a good game except for Hugo Lloris, who didn't make a single save all match.
What a just sell him. So bring back Aurelio Gomez.
I'm in favor of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, Swansea, their expected goals from the match, I think, was 0.04. They had one shot from 25 yards that was not on target. Like, they created nothing, and we were rampant. And that's exciting to see because we haven't gotten a lot of that this season.
Did this game do anything to quell your concerns about a Lamella-less Spurs, Ben? Or is it that is maybe something we can't judge based on the opponent?
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, Lamella really helps against good teams and teams that, you know, we need to press heavily. The big thing for me, though, was just seeing guys like Son, and particularly Dele Alli, I think, had his first really good game of the season. He struggled a bit. You know, Eriksen is scoring again. Harry Kane scored, you know, getting our attack in sync, clicking, creating chances for each other. That's encouraging. So, you know, I'm excited going forward. You know, we have United next week, which I'm assuming we'll talk about eventually. But, you know, this was a good game to lead into that match.
Well, it's certainly good to see them clicking again before that, because I'm not sure United's a team that Spurs are going to get right against. Although, Pochettino has a way of getting Spurs up for big opposition. I'm not sure.
Are Manchester United big anymore?
Oh, Brian, I like the way you think. But, yeah. I mean, have we gotten manhandled by any big teams since Pochettino? I was trying to think about this the other day, like, because usually we're in any game we have against the big team, from what I can recall.
We got manhandled by Newcastle. Does that count?
Oh, stop it.
They're the biggest team in the championship.
They are the biggest team in the championship.
Except for Aston Villa.
They should be a big team.
No, I mean, that has been, I can't remember the Mason Bentaleb season.
No, but we played Arsenal tough. I don't think Arsenal's beat us since Pochettino's taken over. You know, I just can't remember us getting thumped by a big team under Pochettino, because he usually brings out weird tactical tricks against those teams.
I think we got whacked by Liverpool one time when Bentaleb had that terrible giveaway. I think that might have been the closest thing to an ass-kicking that we had.
I thought we got shellacked by City, like, that first season.
No, that was, like, the 4-2 game where we were in it, but, like, Soldado missed a penalty or... Like, that was, like, one of our more dynamic performances, and it just, like, fell apart towards the end. But, yeah, it's – I don't know. Like, next week ought to be interesting.
But mostly that's the thing we've fixed, and that's the thing – you know, looking at our Chelsea performance that people had a lot of problems with because we threw away a lead, you know, we saw this weekend Man City throw away an even more dominant performance against, you know, a really good Chelsea side and get fucked up worse than we did. So – you know, and again, you know, see Liverpool blow it against Bournemouth. You know, we do pretty well against the big teams. It's just games like this are the kind of games that we need to do more of.
We still haven't figured out quite how to carve open those sides that are just defending against us, which is frustrating, but hopefully that's something we can fix, especially now that we've got, you know, a lot of those points we dropped this year. I mean, I don't want to be that guy who makes injury excuses for his team, but we were missing vital parts of our attack and our defense, and now they're back. And speaking of which, see this smooth, subtle transition I'm making right now. Harry Kane, I'm not sure I was ever worried about him, but I'm really not worried about him after this game. Like, I think that guy's back up to speed. Brian, you think Kane's back in fighting shape now? I mean, he looked pretty clinical against Swansea, and I think he's looked decent enough before that.
Yeah, I mean, I there's certainly no reason to suspect that he's missed any sort of beat. I mean, he scored coming back in his first game back from injury against Arsenal. Again, it was just a penalty, but, I mean, you saw all the sorts of pre-injury Harry Kane stuff you were used to seeing. The movement off the ball, the physicality.
Creating openings for other players.
Yeah, you know, doing things that striker's supposed to do and also scoring goals.
Scoring goals.
Yeah.
On other teams are supposed to score goals. I think the not scoring goals thing is a uniquely Spurs.
Is it? That's weird. I think he's back up to full speed. I think you're exactly right. I don't think there were a lot of questions about whether he would or wouldn't, at least not for me. I thought he was going to hit the ground running.
He should, but I mean, you know, we should have beat Newcastle last year. So, one thing we were chatting about this a little bit before we started recording, and I'm curious what you guys think of it. Everyone to hear what you guys think of it. I noticed in this game when Kane's second goal and his penalty, I mean, he whacked those balls pretty hard. They were low shots, but he hit them real hard. And I mean, is Kane hitting the ball with a little more venom this year, or am I just sort of noticing two isolated incidents? Because a lot of his balls last year are these sort of daisy cutters that are well-placed, and they're not slow by any means. But, you know, Kane's not the kind of guy you think of scoring those, like, Aguero volleys that, you know, are just vicious, you know, drives into the back of the net. I mean, is Kane hitting the ball a little harder, or am I just noticing an aberration in this game?
I mean, he certainly hit his second goal really hard, but, you know, he was running onto it at full sprint from, you know, half field. So, you know, that's different than his normal create a pocket of space for himself in the box and then place it where it needs to go. I don't know that it matters. I don't really care how he scores them
It's totally incidental. I just happened to notice it in this particular match.
You know, that curler against Arsenal last year was no powder puff goal.
No. In fact, I'm not sure that goal is an adequate word to describe it either. So. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's anything about this match that wasn't encouraging. Is there anyone, I mean, Brian, is there anyone who you think deserves special kudos who isn't, you know, sort of immediately obvious based on the players we've talked about?
I thought this was the best game I'd seen from Jan Vertonghen in a long time. Jan Vertonghen. Yeah, I mean, that's probably part of it. But, I mean, you know, when we brought in Toby last season, it felt like Jan kind of took a little bit of a back seat. And, you know, for as amazing as Toby was, Jan was simply, you know, good, which was great. And then this year when Toby went down, you thought, okay, well, now is when Jan is really going to have to step up and he's going to have to be the star at the back. And it just never really happened. And, you know, part of that maybe was because he doesn't have a good rapport with Eric Dyer or, you know, who knows. But this was the first game where I thought he really, really looked like the kind of defender he looked like the season before we brought Toby in.
Yeah, I thought sort of bouncing off of that, maybe because of the way Vertonghen looked, I thought that Eric Dyer had his probably best performance as center back in this game. I mean, his passing in particular I thought was excellent in the way that we kind of got used to him doing out of midfield last year, but he really hasn't done out of, you know, the back line this year. And it was nice to see. I mean, it's probably his last game at center back for a minute, except maybe the Cesca game tomorrow. We're recording this Monday night, so maybe that'll be his last game. But it was nice to see, at least maybe as a precursor to him bringing a little bit more passing to our midfield starting this weekend. But Ben, I mean, anyone you think deserves plaudits who didn't get it already? You want to compliment Moussa Sissoko on his assist?
I do. I mean, Moussa
Sissoko. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, it was just magisterial in the words of Ray Hudson.
Fuck you.
Just put it on a platter for Christian Eriksen.
Nothing like a Swansea defense that is completely given up to get you off the schneid.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was fine. If that's all we're going to use him for, great.
I mean, this was clearly, I mean, we brought him in in the 70th minute, like immediately after we scored our fourth goal. This was clearly let's get some rust off. Let's let him maybe do well.
Give him the absolute lowest pressure situation possible. Exactly.
Let him
see what happens.
Do something.
And along those lines, it was nice that we got Josh Onuma on the pitch again. He has not really kicked on this season to the degree we'd hoped. You know, Harry Winks, I think, has stolen the hearts of our youth-minded fans.
Yeah.
That sounds really creepy when you phrase it that way.
Well,
I'm it probably exactly should. Creepy as it sounds.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, don't worry about me.
The hunch, you know.
So yeah, I mean, it was nice to see the kids. You know, Winks got another run out. Hopefully, we'll see both of them again against Cesca.
I mean, against Cesca, we're going to see both of them. We're going to see. I mean, there's no way we don't see. I think Nkudu's going to get a full 90. I would hope, or at least you know he'll start. I mean, I don't know. We're hoping for just full on developmental squad against Cesca, right?
Basically, to the extent we can.
Yeah, rest people and get people minutes. It would be very nice. Speaking of which, kind of a shame that we're going back to the Europa League, right?
Assuming things go well tomorrow,
yeah. Well, that's a good question. What would you guys rather do? I mean, obviously, we're going to play a developmental squad, but do you want to play in the Europa League? Would you rather crash out?
I mean, I think we talked about this a lot last week, so I don't know that we need to belabor it again. But
yeah, but now that the reality is confronting us, I just want to briefly revisit it.
Just to reiterate, yes, I think we should be in the Europa League. It's another chance to win a trophy. It's another chance to qualify for the Champions League. You know, we're kind of getting set adrift right now as, like, the fifth team, waiting for someone to slip up ahead of us and hope we can sneak in. I would not mind sacrificing another opportunity, or I would not want to sacrifice another opportunity to qualify for the Champions League.
I suppose,
and I feel the opposite. Yeah. So I want us to drop out entirely and just play league football.
And maybe make a cup run. I would like to win a cup of some fashion this year.
Well, that is like one of two cups we could be in.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But I would like to win one of them. So,
but the UEFA Cup just doesn't have, or Europa League.
No, you know what? You say that.
Just doesn't have the majesty of the FA Cup, guys.
I mean,
and magic.
The Europa League is so weird because it's one of those things where, like, I don't think anyone gets excited by it. But if you make it to the semifinals, I think you get kind of hyped about, oh, we could win a European Cup. That would be, or a European trophy. That would be.
That'd be great.
It'd be kind of fun, and like it'd be nice to have, and it could, you know, obviously it'll qualify for the Champions League, which would also be nice.
Right, and we already know we're going to crash out of the FA Cup to Aston Villa, so we need to keep that trophy hope alive.
That's right, the Tim Sherwood Derby, the Tim Sherwood Cup. We can win the most important trophy of all,
the Golden Gilet.
Ben, we made a rather interesting discovery today, didn't we? Who is the manager of Aston Villa?
Yeah, Steve Bruce. I did not know that that had happened, but apparently he has turned things around and gotten them to be a reasonably coherent team again, instead of a team that might get relegated from the championship.
Who was so, it? Was Di Matteo? Was he the guy before
yes.
them?
Oof. Yes, they fired him.
Oof.
So, and that's pretty Spurs to get teams as they're rounding into form and as, you know, things are going well. Like, we played Liverpool when Klopp got appointed. That's kind of what happens. But it's Aston Villa. If we can't beat Aston Villa, then shame on all of us.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I don't care what form they're in. They're Aston Villa. We should beat them.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they lost to some garbage, not garbage, but some lower league side in the Capital One Carling thing.
Was that before Bruce took over?
Yes, that was under Di Matteo's reign.
Okay, well.
It's a different ballgame now, Brian.
Yeah, that's
same players though. Same
big
player.
It's a big jolly ball game. So let's talk about Man United a little bit before we get into some listener questions. I mean, Brian, how are you feeling heading into this match? United seem to be this like in this weird state of evaluation where people can't decide if they are unlucky and defensively solid or if they are drastically underperforming the massive amount of talent they have. Where do you fall on evaluating United?
I think on the massively underperforming side. I'll admit I haven't watched a lot of Manchester United this year just because I find Mourinho teams to be incredibly boring and
they're irrelevant.
Yeah, and they're irrelevant. But, you know, from you know, the little I have seen of them, he's making some very confusing lineup choices. You know, he this weekend specifically, he had been playing Ander Herrera at the kind of the base of his diamond in midfield.
What?
And
he was what?
Playing Ander Herrera at the base of his diamond in midfield.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. It makes sense, well, right?
He's been really good there. Herrera's been really good.
No, Herrera's an excellent player. I'm just, that doesn't seem like the place where he would
work. Oh, you're surprised that he was playing at all?
No, but no.
He wasn't really a diamond, so that's kind of misleading, but
sorry, he was pyramid, triangle, you know, whatever.
Okay, but, sorry. I know I like Ander Herrera a lot. I just thought you'd play him further forward than that.
No, I mean, but he's playing very – he had been playing very well as that holder, and then he moved him out of that position this week and put in back in Michael Carrick against an Everton team that were going to press and, you know, play the ball around, and it just didn't work very well. You know, and I don't really understand a lot of the stuff that Mu is doing with his team. I mean, you've obviously got the problems with Wayne Rooney, which they seem to have largely figured out. But I don't think Mourinho has any idea what to do with Pogba, and the fact that, you know, you still have Morgan Schneiderlin languishing on the bench and Ander Herrera playing basically all over the place. And I don't really think they have that much of a settled back line, whether that's due to injuries or just Mourinho tinkering with things. They're just not as scary this year. Despite them having probably the best player in the world and also a striker who can create goals out of nothing.
So I'm going to just disagree a lot with your assessment of United. Sorry.
No, that's why you
exist. We're seeing what happens when people talk about Manchester United, but here, that's fine.
Yeah, so I think Pogba's been very good. I want to say I saw that Pogba to Zlatan has been like the most creative pairing in the Premier League this season.
In terms of goals or in terms of like
in terms of like chances created? Yeah. And Zlatan has been mostly very good. You know, Mkhitaryan finally got back into the team this week and has been good. And so we're going to face that, which is annoying. I mean, they had a really
what was going on there. If it was just like Mourinho personal spite or if it was like,
no idea.
Was he hurt?
He had it. He was hurt, but hurt doesn't explain all of what happened. And then he played in the cup against West Ham. After United drew West Ham, they came back and beat them 4-0. And Mkhitaryan had two assists, and Martial, who hasn't really been playing a ton this season, he had a really good game. And against Everton, both of those guys played. So it seems like, you know, we're primed to get, again, a United figuring things out. Eric, I don't know how to say his last name. If it Bailey, Bailly. He's back from injury, and he was fantastic to start the season. And they've had, some trouble figuring out a back four in his absence. And, of course, he should be back for the Spurs match. So that doesn't do us any favors. Fellaini got himself penaltied at suspended. The end of the Everton match, and so we won't see him again. Yeah, suspended, whatever. I'm gonna go with penaltied. He penaltied.
You watched it?
No, he did. I mean, he did literally penalty. So I mean, yeah.
He penaltied Idrissa Gueye, and now we won't have to see Fellaini. We'll see someone better. So some of the bad lineup things seem to be taken out of Mourinho's hands, and time has sort of forced a better United team onto the pitch just in time for us to play them. Stats people will say they've been unlucky. They've played better than their points are. I hope that bad luck continues one more match.
Do you think that's true? Because it seems to me, looking at United, that it's somewhere in between. Like, I think they've definitely been a little bit better than the results this year, but there seem to be some real... I mean, and maybe, like you said, maybe through injury or just time, these things have sorted themselves out. But, like, there seems to be some real behind-the-scenes issues at United.
There are. There's definitely a better version of United than we've gotten from Mourinho. Like, he's not been great.
Yeah, but and it feels like, yeah, Mourinho is, like, doing – he's actively keeping United from being better. At least it feels that way. I don't know if that's true or not, but.
And it's like, you know, the fact that they have been subpar for what they could be and they've been unlucky, like, those are not mutually exclusive. You know, they've been unlucky with what they have, and maybe a better lineup, a better coach, you know, some better decisions would have helped overcome some of that luck. So, you know, United are never a team to be taken lightly. They are, you know, in sixth place, just 6 points behind us.
But, I mean, Mourinho's not as – I mean, God, these are famous last words. He just doesn't seem as scary as he used to. And maybe that'll change, but
– No, I mean, after his last season at Chelsea and now this, you know, he's obviously not the dominant football
force. Even the way that, like, just unite – like, I know he was always good at Madrid, but, like, the way that all just fell apart at him on him that last year there. Like, between all these things, you're right. He's just not the dominant – domineering, all-conquering force right. that he used
but
to be.
It was only 2 years ago that he whipped the league's ass with Chelsea. So it's not that far removed. So you can never write him off. You can never write off United. I hope we whip the shit out of him. That's all I can really say.
It would be nice. The way that he's managed United so far this year and the way Pochettino manages against big teams, it would be... You know, I'm not saying that would be the craziest thing in the world, but it'd be nice to see. I would really enjoy beating Manchester United, even if it doesn't maybe have the same allure that it once did.
From a lineup perspective, what do we want to see? Assuming Toby's back, does that give Eric Dier a place in midfield? Do we stick with Wanyama? Are we?
I would rather stick Dier in midfield, but like if Pochettino just doesn't want to like disrupt the way our midfield's been playing lately, or you know, I can sort of understand that against a team like, you know, against the Mourinho team. Like, I would understand why he might not want to make Dier readjust, you know, against a team of this caliber. But I don't know, Brian, would you immediately throw Dier back in and sit Wanyama, or would you sort of roll with what we did and hope that we just have Wanyama shielding the back four and not doing too much?
I think it really depends on what you do against Cesca. If Eric Dier has to play in defense against Cesca, then I would, I guess, continue to roll with Wanyama. But if you're going to play
if we don't start Vimmer and Carter Vickers against Cesca, then like I don't know what the hell we're doing.
So, but I'm with you guys. Like, I would much prefer Dier moving back into defense, into midfield. But I feel like it's really going to be dependent upon kind of how the Cesca match plays out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not playing Carter Vickers means we want to qualify for the Europa League. I think that's the answer.
Cesca's best player is suspended for doing cocaine, like
for like 4 years.
Exactly. Well, two, but yeah, it's like
whatever. That's the same thing.
You know, it's like my point is we should be able to start Vickers and still qualify for the Europa League.
I don't know why we assume that he's even that good. Like, you know, if Cameron Carter-Vickers was in the Russian league, he wouldn't be starting every week. Like, I don't know. Like, he's not good yet.
He's not, so, but we should still be able to get a result out of this game. And given that the game means relatively little, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's not just Cameron Carter-Vickers against Cesca.
That would be a good lineup choice, though. Preserve everybody's health and fitness for United.
Yeah, I mean,
just Cameron Carter-Vickers. I mean,
this comes back to, we've talked about this in previous weeks. This is what sort of irritates me about our transfer activity. Like, if we're not prepared to throw Carter-Vickers in so we can rest other players in a game like this that doesn't mean all that much, and we've got a big match coming up so we could stand to rest some of our players, we don't necessarily have to. Like, you know, I could buy that you could play Dier in the back line in this game and then start him in midfield on Sunday. Like, that's not a crazy ask. It's not like he's going to be running around all over the place.
Right. But if we don't trust Carter Vickers for now, why the fuck did we not buy
him? Yeah, this is a game where, like, in major Europa League games, I can buy that we cannot trust him. But this, like, what are we doing? Like, why did we – if we can't trust him here, why did we not go buy a right-footed center back in the offseason? Like, I mean, if we decided we were going to roll with Vickers, we better roll with Vickers here, I think. Carter Vickers, whatever we're calling him.
I think we should probably call him whatever his name is, so.
CCV.
Yeah, there you go. CCTV.
Whatever. CCTV, there we go. Yeah, I'll be frustrated if we're not seeing Vimmer and Vickers against Seska. And I guess Trippier and I don't know, is Davies healthy yet?
I don't think so.
Ugh. That's really fucked us.
Yeah, that's the problem, is we don't have that, you know. If we just bought a third left back.
Or yeah, Levy. Four reliable center backs, that meant we could play Vertonghen at left back.
Yeah.
Now, Vertonghen will leave us if he plays left back.
Fine.
Actually, maybe not now. He signed that new contract, so he's probably screwed now. Lost all his leverage.
Forever.
Yeah, we made sure he didn't put a left back clause in it.
Or did we?
Or did we? Well, where's Football Leaks when you really need it?
Maybe that's how we got him to sign.
Where's Football Leaks when we need them? So that's Manchester United. I mean, how are you guys feeling in general about this game? I mean, are you just concerned about the fact that United's going to be rounding into form and integrating some of their better players, or?
Terrified by every Spurs game.
Yeah, okay. That's entirely reasonable reaction. Brian.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that all of those things. They have the world's best player. They have Zlatan. Of course I'm scared.
Are you calling Pogba the world's best player? Or?
I think he's talking about Rooney. Zlatan.
Yeah, I was talking about... I was calling Pogba the world's best player. There was a comma in there. I maybe didn't punctuate it very well once I said it out loud.
Better than Messi?
Yeah, I don't know. No, fine. He's not better than Messi.
Better than Ronaldo?
Ronaldo's old and washed now, so yeah.
No one is better than Ronaldo.
Is he better than Modric?
No one's better than Modric.
Right, there we go, thank you. So the world's fourth best player.
All right, yeah, there we go.
Well, is he better than Bale?
Is he better than Neymar?
Yep. All right, they have one of the world's best midfielders.
There we go. I kind of hate Zlatan. I hate his artificial persona that has been created by the marketing agency.
I really don't think that's artificial.
I think that is his persona, yeah.
It is enhanced, let's put it that way. I just don't think those quotes are coming from him. I think they are being written by people.
Oh, ye of little faith.
I have very little faith in him.
Well, yes, Greg, they're being written by journalists.
Okay, yes, thank you. Journalist,
the duty to report the truth.
All right. Let's do some questions from our listeners. All right. Let's hit a few. So this is wishcasting a little bit, but it's also something that might happen, which actually makes me kind of happy. Leicester City lost this weekend to the resurgent David Moyes Sunderland team, and it was great. It was like a fairy tale, you might say. So Brad Austin, who is on Twitter, asks, who should we buy from Leicester when they get relegated? Brian?
I don't know. Who's even good to place for them?
Yeah, everybody on that team is terrible.
Yeah, they're garbage.
Mara is kind of – they should have cashed in on him when they got the chance.
And Vardy, who has done nothing.
I think I'd still take Drinkwater.
Not Wes Morgan.
Why would you take Danny Drinkwater when we have Harry Winks? Come on.
I think that's exactly why I would take Danny Drinkwater.
Would you take Mahrez for like 20 to 30 million?
No.
Like this season has done enough to dissuade you from that?
No, I just
If we could straight swap Sissoko for Mahrez.
Okay, well, like million. I would straight swap Sissoko for like Vardy, so
Ben Chilwell. I don't know. I think Drinkwater would be fine.
You would Mahrez get like Okazaki or something like that.
I think Okazaki would be fun in our system.
Slimani?
I don't really want Slimani. I'd like Okazaki or Drinkwater. I think those would be. I'd be fine with either of those.
Ahmed Musa.
No.
Ben?
I don't know. I mean, Musa hasn't done a lot in the league, but I did like him before he came to Leicester, and he's fast. And if
we have Nkudu.
Yeah. I mean, I would much rather block Nkudu's development than Harry Winks's. So that's where I'm at. I don't know. I don't really want anyone from Leicester. Like,
I would want Vardy and just like
bury Vardy as a backup. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just bury him on our bench. Like, never let him play. Have him just train with the youth team and just don't sell him.
Like, I mean, after the season Mahrez had last year, even if he's had a shitty year this year, like, I don't know. You probably got to take him, right?
Well, the problem is, like, okay, let's assume that, like, I know this is crazy, but, like, even if Mahrez is having a kind of season like he had last year, like, where does, like, who does he displace in Spurs lineup? Like, does he put Dele Alli on the bench? Is he putting Lamela on the bench? Is he putting, I mean, he's probably putting Son on the bench.
But then what about Christian Eriksen?
I mean, he's not putting Christian Eriksen on the bench.
I don't even know who to put on the bench, like, between our four attacking midfielders when Lamela comes back. So, I don't know. I mean, somebody, probably, or just having him as a rotation option is great, so we don't have to play guys like Sissoko. And being able to rotate is, you know, that's nice.
Yeah, I think, for me, it's Okazaki, just in terms of, like, realistic, like, realism and, like, where they would fit in our team. Like, he seems to make the most sense to me. I'm not sure I really, like, want him.
I don't know what Okazaki even gives you. He's, like, a hard-working striker who doesn't score goals.
Yeah, you throw him on late and just, like, cause problems for people. He's like a Kudu in the middle or something.
Yeah, I literally want nobody from the team that won the league last year.
What a time to be alive. Conte, does he still count?
Yeah, right? I'd take Conte.
Ugh. I can't believe Chelsea. I mean, I can absolutely believe Chelsea got him, but it's still really fucking annoying.
Yep.
It'll be great when they get relegated, though. That would be really fun. And they also win the Champions League the same year.
I'd take it. I don't care. I want them gone. I hate them.
So if they win the Champions League, how many Skittles and vodka will Jamie fill it with?
Seven.
There
is the Champions League trophy like an actual drinkable cup?
I mean, you can put like, I mean, I assume you could put fluid in it and you could then drink out of it.
Yeah, I just didn't know if it was like, I can't recall what it looks like. Oh, right. Man. It's the big one. I know.
You even watch soccer?
We did all our trophy chat last week before the show.
I know. We looked at so many trophies, I couldn't remember which was which. So many of them were like weird abstract art.
Yeah, a lot of abstract art in South America. And Portugal.
Yeah, Portugal, real bad.
I don't know. I like their League Cup. Look up Portugal's League Cup. The Taça, everyone. Or I don't know how you pronounce it. Ben, how do you pronounce it?
I don't know what you are saying.
Okay. All right. So moving on. We got a very interesting question from Drew Samuels on Twitter. He wants to know, Brian, you can answer this. We should spoil Ben on the finale of this show. But he wants to know which Spurs players are Westworld robots and which are humans. You there, Brian? Did we lose Brian?
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
I had a long diatribe going, but I'd muted it. And it's just, all those witty comments are just gone.
Lost to the ether.
Yeah. Okay, so who's a Westworld robot and who isn't? I think it's weird because you have to – to determine who's a Westworld robot, you really have to determine like who's kind of like self-aware and who isn't. And so I feel like Dele and Eric Dier are both pretty self-aware, so they are definitely not Westworld robots. Harry Kane, on the other hand, is decidedly a Westworld robot. He just doesn't have a fully developed personality, and he's
not aware
of it. He does
one thing very well and doesn't do anything else.
He just has one loop that he goes through, which is to score goals over and over and over again.
And says buzzing in every interview.
Exactly. He's only got a few. Yeah, he's got so many coded responses to things. So if anybody's a Westworld robot, it's Harry Kane.
I think Eric Lamela is like one of the Westworld robots, like nearing self-awareness, but he's like stuck in a loop and can't help himself.
Is his loop murdering all of those around him?
Exactly. He's trying to be like this really artful, like skilled passer and scorer, And instead, he just can't help himself, you know, because he just wants to start killing.
He can't defy his programming.
Yeah, he can't, you know, he just craves murder. Like, he is programmed to kill.
Yeah, I think Wanyama also is like, he's programmed to wreck shit in midfield and eat spaghetti, and that's as far as it goes.
You just run into him on the street, and he's just, like, talking to you about spaghetti. He's like,
I like spaghetti.
Yeah, he's like the NPC in, like, Final Fantasy or something. You just run into. Always just ask you about spaghetti. Good.
Early Twitter game was good enough that I think he's a human, but I don't know if we've seen much out of him. Maybe that was just like he had a few lines of dialogue programmed when he first got here. And
yeah, and he's run through them all. So,
you know, he's like a new model robot that's just really, really lifelike and has a lot of genuine personality, but he's just now back on his loop of running fast down the left wing. It's so hard to tell. I mean, that's the real thing.
It's very hard to tell. He's the crowd favorite robot character. They like going on quests with, but he doesn't get in their way or help them succeed.
Yep, that's all I got on that.
Okie doke.
Yeah, you really need to finish the show.
Ben!
So behind.
You'll get there, Ben. We believe in you. Ben, this comes from Unfit for Purpose, noted call-in radio show enthusiast on Twitter. He wants to know, what is your strongest Tottenham first 11, and which player is the weakest part of that lineup?
So,
I assume we're talking current team here, as opposed to...
Yeah, not an all-star 11. I wouldn't know where to begin.
David for Bentley. This team, you begin with David Bentley.
Obviously.
Aurelio Gomez.
You know, the back five obviously picks itself. I would say Dyer over Wanyama in midfield. Dembele, of course. And then Eriksen and Lamella and Kane. And then my choice is between Son and Ali, who I think, you know, are a little redundant in terms of what they bring to the table. So I would leave one of them out rather than play both of them. And it's hard because I think they're both just so erratic, you know, between game to game.
They're capable of being men of the match, but they are also capable of being largely anonymous.
Yeah, I mean, I think just right now, Son has had a better season and, you know, has had more good seasons than Dele Alli has managed. So,
but Dele Alli has had more good games in a Spurs shirt, which, you know, I don't know if that counts for anything, but.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But, I mean, if we're looking at just this season, I think Son has clearly had the better season of the two of them. So right. I'd ride that hot hand.
So who's the weakest member of this 11?
I don't know. I mean, Vertonghen, I think, is like kind of the easy answer because we've kind of forgotten him a little bit. You know, with the rise of Toby, he's not like the stud center back anymore. But, you know, as we saw against Swansea, like he still has the ability to be really fucking good.
I think it's, you know, Son, like if, assuming you're saying Son, just because he's the least consistent of all those guys.
Yeah.
Like even when Lamella is like not at his best, there's a certain baseline performance. You can expect him to do the dirty work defensively. He'll at least make some trouble offensively, even if his passes aren't coming off or he's, like, trying too hard to score. Like, he's not going to hurt you, even if he's not going to help you.
Right. And, again, I'm picking Son or Lamella and Eriksen over Son, you know, every week. So, yeah, they're not really in contention for me. I think it's between Son, Dyer, Rose, and Vertonghen for me. I think Rose has turned into a great left back, but he still has problems in terms of what he does with his final ball. He still can't cross. I mean, I guess if Son's the only one I'm debating about, right? It's got to be Son.
He's just the least consistent name. The least consistent name on that team sheet, which, you know, like even when, like we were saying, like Lamella always offers you a certain level of performance. Rose always offers you a certain level of defensive stability.
Right. If we could make one signing to make our first 11 better, that's probably the position I would say is most worth upgrading. So I guess I'll go Son. Sorry, Sonny. I love you.
Yeah, it's a it's certainly a good problem to have in terms of like what we have done in years past, what we've had in years past.
For sure.
Brian, do you have would your first 11 differ from Ben's in any meaningful way?
I think I'd just take Allie over Sun. I think that's the only real difference.
Is he the weakest member of your squad?
For
the same reason, I would say that, but
no, I mean, I think my decision would come down to either Dyer or Danny Rose.
Really? Dyer in a midfield role, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Dyer in a midfield role, but I still just think like it's still a role that he is very much new to, and we've seen him be very good, and we've seen him even be consistently good. Or, you know, consistently above average anyway. But I think if you are going to go out and improve Spurs, the best way to improve it is to improve on that one role. Because we've seen what, you know, a really good defensive midfielder can do for teams. You get, N'Golo Kante into Leicester, and they're suddenly the best team in the Premier League, or win the Premier League anyway.
You think if we get a guy like Schneiderlin or Kante and replace Dyer with them.
Yeah. And the thing about that is though, is like, I think the world of really good N'Golo Kantes is really, really small. Like there's just not a lot of guys in world football that you would pick over Eric Dyer in that position, which is why I guess,
I don't know, a
handful, but not a lot. Like there's
guys who are within our like realistic grasp.
Right. Well, there's like a bunch of guys you could get to be a really good left winger in a way that I don't know. I agree that I think Dyer certainly has problems. He's, you know, not his final evolved Pokemon form, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly right that there are more attacking midfielders or left attacking midfielders or second strikers or whatever out there than really high quality defensive midfielders.
But
I think you're getting better value for your money if you're dropping, you know, 30 million on a really good defensive midfielder than you are if you're dropping 30 million on like an attacking midfielder.
Like Musa Sissoko, for example.
Yeah.
So it seems like the main difference here is, do we want to drop, is it Son or Ali who gets in the team? Maybe for some people it's Ali or Eriksen. I don't think there's any best Tottenham 11 that doesn't involve Christian Eriksen, but are there any other realistic players who could, I mean, I think there's a world in which you could talk about if it's Wanyama or Dyer. I think that's I think Wanyama has things that he offers, but he doesn't have the intelligence or the passing range of Eric Dyer.
There are some folks that still aren't on the Moussa Dembélé train for whatever reason.
So who would he lose out to on this Spurs team?
Yeah, I mean, you play Dyer Wanyama or
play Harry Winks,
or do you play?
One day that's a realistic.
Right, it's nothing. Moussa Dembélé is the best player on our team.
Midfield three with Dyer and then also. Ali and Eriksen, or I don't see
anyone else other than Ali and Son who are like maybe on the outside looking in. I mean, I don't know. Nkudu could get there one day, but he's not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of our team, we don't have the depth to really like have a conversation. You know, attacking midfield is kind of like the only place we have options.
Yeah, we have like a best 12.
Forces a question.
And maybe in a year or two, like with Winks and maybe Onuma. Like,
and maybe you call it a 13 and you include Wanyama and,
Yeah, okay. So 13, that, I think that's fair, even though I think Wanyama's beats out anyone in our midfield, but he's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, you think he's bad, Ben, but
maybe if Anthony scored a couple goals.
Yeah, not a question. I mean, the spine of our team from Hugo to Toby to Dembélé to Eriksen to Kane is pretty perfect. You know, I don't think there's many teams in the world that, up the middle are better than that. It's just sort of how you fill it in around them.
So that was a good discussion. Next question comes...
Entirely too serious for the mailbag.
I know. It's a little disturbing how much actual discussion we got out of that.
We usually turn the podcast off by now, so they missed, like...
Yeah, so Unfit won't even hear it. He's always turning it off. You know, he probably won't even listen to us without Michael around. So let's get back where we should get. This is from Reno Wallabout. He wants to know, what movie does Harry Winks take you to on a first date? Brian?
I mean, isn't it definitely, you know, the dollar value family theater that just showing reruns of White Chicks?
I mean, I think it's Frozen. He's trying to impress you, and that's his idea of, like, impressing you.
No, I feel like if he was going to try to impress you, he'd just go with, like, something that had, like, won an award, but that he hadn't seen, so, like, Crash.
It would be the Benghazi movie that Michael Bay made.
Oh, there's
stretching himself as a filmmaker. I hear it's really good. I love Transformers.
He'd probably take you to see Boondock Saints.
Oh, God.
The kind of...
Boondock Saints 2, though, because he'd be like...
He's really stretching himself. You know, he's still, like, the kind of teenager who watches the most basic shit, but, like, this is, like, someone just showed him Boondock Saints, and it blew his mind, and he's like, this is some next-level shit.
Boondock Saints really is, like, Karl Marx for people in fraternities, isn't it?
I like Boondock Saints.
Oh, my God.
See? Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Damn it.
Hoisted by your own petard.
As usual, I like Boondock Saints and Tokyo Drift.
Hey, well, let's not conflate Boondock Saints and the greatest American movie ever made.
That's true.
Jesus.
Ben?
I think he would take you on his first date to 50 first dates because he never wants it to end.
You know what kind of basic movie he would take?
He's certainly a really big fan of Adam Sandler's late career.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
He's like, have you seen Grown Up 7? Come on. Kevin James is transcendent.
And then, like, Ryan Mason showed him, like, Happy Gilmore, and it blew his mind. I never even heard of this movie. Incredibly basic movie, Harry Winks would take you on a first date, especially this time of year. It would be Love Actually.
I mean, that's a phenomenal movie.
I mean, it's not, Ben.
So much to it. There are like 7 different storylines in one movie. And they're all about love.
They're all about like borderline illegal activity. Stalking,
what's this movie called?
Rape.
Well, Actually?
Yes, it's called Well, Actually. Well, it's about a bunch of men who explain to women how romance works.
No, it's about a bunch of people on the internet who explain why Love Actually is actually a good movie. That's what it's about.
Boo. I think I'd watch that.
Finally, our last question comes from Ravi Khatri. I apologize if I'm getting that name wrong. It's the holiday season, so Spurs are doing Secret Santa. You are invited. Whose name did you draw, and what are you buying him? Ben?
I drew Harry Kane, and I gave him a lump of coal because I think he would find it incredibly motivating and take it really to heart and just try so hard to do better for next year. I think Harry Kane still believes in Santa Claus.
So would he believe you are Santa Claus?
I don't think he would believe it came from me. He would think Santa Claus gave him a lump of coal and was disappointed in something he did this year and would spend the rest of the season trying really, really hard to be the best Harry Kane he could be.
It's not really a secret, Santa, is it?
The secret is I'm Santa.
Okay. Because it's just Santa for Harry.
Right.
Ugh. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he understands the whole concept of secret Santa.
Brian.
He doesn't want that immigrant coming in and taking jobs from good British folk.
Brian, who would you draw and what would you give him?
I would draw Tom Carroll, and I would give him a small doll made in his likeness.
Very good, very good. I would draw Tom Glover, and I would give him lots of bleach. that I'm sure he puts to good use.
And a Dexter box set, just in
exactly,
case.
Exactly. Lots of plastic. Just so he knows wrap.
Exactly how to use it.
Lots of plastic wrap as well. And on that extremely inside baseball note, let's wrap this one up. Ben, where can people find you online?
The moment of truth. Here we go.
Moment of truth.
You can find me at MC underscore of underscore A, where I will tell you how numbers changed the world and also wrestling.
There you go. Brian, where can people find you? Where can people find you on the internet?
I don't know. This is the worst part of the podcast. I don't know why we do it every single week. But
I don't either.
I'm just trying to expand your brand, Ben. I'm trying to expand your brand.
No one follows me on Twitter. I just scream into an empty void.
No, you scream into like a pit, a basket of sex bots.
Almost exclusively sex bots, yes.
Exactly.
There's worse things you could scream into, I suppose.
I'm pretty sure there aren't. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, at Brett Rainbow, where I will be arguing that numbers are what's ruining the game of football and also talking about wrestling.
Good, good. I am Skipjack, your host, and you can find me at MC underscore of underscore A, where you can tell me about why you think Gilmore Girls, almost, damn it. Why do you think Gilmore Girls is terrible and really not a very good show and also not feminist? Also wrestling. And on that note, for Ben Daniels, for Brian, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.